She put her hand on mine and she said, "Roxanne, you don't have to censor yourself when you talk with me." And that gave me such an exhale, such a relief, such a deep breath.
Yeah.
Right? To know that I could just speak freely, because many of us pause, we do the mental gymnastics. I remember years ago, a 15-year-old was brought into my practice and her mother brought her in and said, "She's really depressed. We don't know what's going on. Can you talk to her?" Asked her about the third session, because they take a while. Yes. After about the third session, we began to realize that she was struggling significantly with her self-esteem because of social media.
Welcome to Conversations with Your Chinese Auntie podcast. Your host, Patricia Peterson, has conversations with BIPOC folks in this podcast. We give voice to people of color and learn more about their lives. Join your Chinese auntie as she has compelling conversations with fascinating people. Without any further ado, let's dive headfirst into this episode.
Hello, everybody. Today, my guest is Roxanne Francis. Roxanne is an award-winning CEO of Francis Psychotherapy and Consulting Services. She runs a busy group practice and is a keynote speaker, leadership coach, and corporate consultant who address topics related to women's issues, race, equity, mental health, parenting, and wellness at work. She is also the founder of the Therapist Lounge, which helps private practice social workers and psychotherapists meet their needs for community wellness and business support. You can read more about Roxanne on the show notes. I met Roxanne on social media, Instagram. In this episode, Roxanne and I talk about youth and social media, how to navigate social media safely, and we also talk about scanning for safety. Now, a lot of us who identify as BIPOC, we scan for safety, and a lot of us don't even know we're doing it. For example, scanning for safety look like when you go into a coffee shop, you sit with your back against the wall so that you can see what's going on. I'll talk about this a little bit more at the end of the episode.
Good morning, Rose.
Good morning.
How are you? How was your weekend?
I'm good. The weekend went by really, really quickly. How was the weekend? It was good. Hung out with the family, got some errands done. I have two little boys, and so there is always a lot of laundry.
I have a puppy, so there's not really comparison, but every time we go to the forest, it's like 4 hours later.
Yeah, it's okay. My kids are always asking. I think it's a matter of time before we get a dog. My kids are always asking for a puppy, and I'm just like, I don't know. It just feels like another little person, little life, who will never be able to take care of themselves. At least with the children, I hope that eventually they'll be able to wipe their own bums.
Roxanne, please introduce yourself.
Yeah.
How you identify, where you're from, anything you want to share with the listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Roxanne Francis. I go by she, her pronouns. I have two boys. They are 12 and 9 years old. I have been married for 21 years. And I live in Toronto, Canada. I'm a Canadian citizen, but I was born and raised in Kingston, Jamaica, and came to this country over, I want to say, what year are we in? 2024. I came to this country 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And when I started university in the Caribbean, and I was actually studying the sciences, moved to Canada, took a break from school because immigration will do that to you, and then turned everything on its head. And when I decided to go back to school, I decided that I wanted to go to school for social work. So I did that, entered the workforce, and started working with children. And that sort of snowballed into working with families, their parents, and that segued into counseling / therapy. And fast forward a few years later, I worked for a number of agencies, and then eventually I left agency and decided to work for myself. And so now I am a therapist and I have a group practice, and there are a handful of us on our team, and we serve clients in person in the GTA or the general Toronto, the greater Toronto area, and virtually all across the province of Ontario. From the knowledge that I have from doing this work, I've also had the opportunity to do some work in the media. So from time to time, I've been in the media talking about mental health, providing mental health suggestions, tips, resources. And I have a really great passion about mental wellness at work. And so I do some consulting with organizations, different companies. I go in and we talk about wellness at work. I do a lot of work with HR departments to talk about their HR policies. I do a lot of work around being Black at work as well. Again, I work with HR or people who head up DE&I departments around supporting their staff. I find there's a lot of very, very solid policies at work around sexual harassment, but there are not as many policies at work around racial discrimination. And so just talking to HR departments around solidifying and supporting their staff in that way. What else do I do? I also support therapists in the field. So I am a certified clinical supervisor, but I also help people who are starting their own practice and also people who have already started their own practice who need support with helping their practice grow, or they want to start a group practice. They want to go from being just them to being a larger group. Because I find that our universities and our schools do great work in terms of helping you learn how to treat the clients who come in the door, but they don't do such a great job with, okay, here's how you start a therapy practice. Here's how you create the business. This is how you decide how much to charge. This is what you do when someone no shows. Like, all of these things are things that people learn on the fly. And I think it causes people to be really afraid of, I don't know if I should start my practice because I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And so I support clinicians as they try to start their practice or expand or grow.
Oh, that's so great, because I didn't learn that at all. I was in Chinese medicine for over 10 years before I became a therapist. And it was the same thing. Nobody teaches you how to run a business. How, mm-hmm. Do you advertise? Do you not advertise? Do you need a mm-hmm. website? Things like that. And networking, that was a huge thing.
Yes. Are you in the Toronto area?
No, I'm in Vancouver.
I was actually in Vancouver in last June. I had a meeting with, I'm not sure if you're familiar with Jane App.
Yes,
that helped. Yeah. So I was at their headquarters last June for a meeting. It was in North Vancouver. Lovely, lovely city.
Ooh, please let me know the next time you come out here.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah. I am curious, with your experience in mental health, has there been anything that you had to unlearn or you had to tweak working with clients or talking to the HR department?
What have I had to unlearn? I think I've had to understand that there are more, as a woman of color, that there are more people, quote unquote, on my side than, you know, society would sort of have you think. I went to what I would consider a very progressive university for my undergrad, and there was a lot of discussion about anti-oppression, anti-racism, a lot of learning around, you know, Indigenous ways of knowing. And I think I left undergrad with this very, you know, everybody's out to get you kind of idea, right? And the interesting thing is that I don't think I went into school with that, right? But we did, there was so much, I think because the majority of the students in the undergraduate program were not persons of color. It was almost as though the university was very keen on ensuring that they realized that they lived in a place of privilege, that oppression was real in our society, that, you know, there are many things that are unfair for persons of color. And I think I left that with, you know, sort of fist in the air kind of, you know. And while there are, while the challenges are real, I've had to realize that there are more allies in our society than I gave sort of credit for, right? And that the experience of life, while persons of color definitely have significant challenges in this country, the experience of life is very much a human experience. And so, you know, in my practice, most of the clinicians are clinicians who are racialized. But I don't want to be, I don't want my practice to be seen as the practice that only sees this kind of people or only sees that kind of people. I want to be able to serve everybody. And I want all kinds of people to be comfortable coming into our services. I want everyone to feel seen. I want everyone to feel valued and to feel heard. Because we all have our challenges, whether or not there are challenges related to race or related to, you know, colonization or oppression, we all have our challenges. And so when a couple comes into our practice and says, we're struggling with communication, I want us to be able to support them and serve them regardless of background. And granted, some people will feel more comfortable talking to therapists than their background, where they don't have to explain, this is what my parents are like, or my parents didn't know how to apologize. Or, you know, while people might feel more comfortable, so, you know, going to work with people who are from their background or culture, and that's important too. I just want people to feel comfortable. That was a long answer.
I love it. And I get what you're saying. How it works out, I'd attract a lot of Asian clients.
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of them will come and they say, I don't have to explain racism. I don't have to. If I say to you, tiger mom, you get it. Mm-hmm. And somatically, mm-hmm. my nervous system gets that you get it. So I don't have to explain it.
Yeah.
And I love that you brought up the ally bit, because so many of us, especially women of color, walk around scanning for safety.
Yes.
And a lot of us don't even know we're doing it because it's so innate in us. I'm curious with your experience, like the ally bit for your maybe personal experience or with clients, is like, how do you encourage one to find the allies? Or do you think they just show up?
Well, the reason that we scan is because sometimes we can't tell, right? If people are allies. I think that when you are in a place where you start to feel uncomfortable talking about the challenges that you live with, you know, then you know that you are not in a space of allyship. I was talking to someone once, a friend of mine. She's white. And we were talking and I was trying to explain something about my lived experience. And I stopped talking because I was trying to figure out how to say it in a way that was palatable. Ooh. And she see me doing the mental gymnastics. And she stopped saying, she put her hand on mine and she said, Roxanne, you don't have to censor yourself when you talk with me. And that gave me such an exhale, such a relief, such a deep breath.
Yeah.
Right? To know that I could just speak freely, because many of us pause, we do the mental gymnastics. Can this person really hold what it is that I have to say? How do I say it without making them feel offended or, right? And so when you are in spaces where you feel like you can speak clearly, where you are almost given this permission without even them having to say the words, then you know that you're in the presence of an ally. I was in a webinar the other day, and the presenter, she was a Black woman, and she said, racialized people are some of the most, what did she say? Are some of the most functioning, anxious people out there, because they are constantly, to your point, scanning, constantly standing for safety. That is the reality of an anxious person. And even if you don't identify as anxious, we are constantly checking, you know, is this safe? Is it okay if I say this? Will they be mad if I say that? Will they understand if I show up in this way? Right? Am I going to have to explain myself if I do that? And that work is exhausting.
Yeah. And I was talking to one of my friends. So we both immigrated from Singapore. And even though we were brought up learning English, so in Singapore's education system is you must learn English and your mother tongue.
Yeah.
And even though we both learned English growing up, when we came here, they said that they had to change the way they speak.
Wow. Yeah.
With English, right? Even something as simple but not simple as the terms you use. Garbage versus rubbish.
Yes.
And constantly thinking, is my English good enough?
Good enough.
I need to change my grammar. I need to change the way I speak in order to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we don't. A lot of us do it without even knowing, because we're told we're not good enough for the Western society.
So it's challenging. As you talk about English, I was presenting a workshop the other day to some hiring managers at a company. And we were talking about what I like to call the politics of accent. And I was saying to them, why is it that accents from a certain part of the world are seen as, you know, not good enough, not smart enough, not polished enough? While accents from a different part of the world are seen as classy, polished, rich, sexy. I said to them, if someone is talking to you and they have an accent from another country that speaks a different language, you need to understand that they're thinking in one language and speaking to you in another. So if all you have is English, they've already passed you in terms of qualifications in certain ways, you know? And then I said to them, also, the other thing you need to consider is that English is not a measure of intelligence. It's a language, right? So many times people think that if not only English, but English in a particular accent, right? Because so many people who weren't born in a Western country grew up learning and speaking English. But if you don't sound Western, then there's all kinds of judgments being placed on you. And that's not fair, because people already have to go through too much garbage to speckle in this country. Right? I could talk about this for days.
Me too. We should just talk about this. I love this. So in my 20s, I was an aerobics teacher. A lot of us did that.
Right? That's amazing. Yeah.
And I was auditioning for one of the bigger chains here. And the director didn't come into the room. She sat outside. We've never met before. And when we came out, she looked at me. She's like, oh, I thought you're British or Australian or South African with your accent. And I was like, huh. And she placed an importance on it because she liked these three accents.
Yes.
Did I get the job? No, because she took one look at me. I didn't get the job.
Oh.
But I would have gotten the job if I didn't look the way I look. But she liked the accent.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. The exotic sounding.
Yeah.
But the racism is real.
It's real. When you did the presentation, did they receive it well?
I think there was, it was no shade to white people and their allies, but it was a room full of white people. And at the beginning, there was a little bit of quiet, very quiet, right? And so what I did was I ended up giving some scenarios and I broke them up into groups to discuss the scenarios. And then we brought it together. And in the discussion, as the discussion started to unfold, you could see that people, they relaxed a little bit. But at the start of the presentation, you could almost see there was this, almost as though they were taking offense. Like, what is she talking about? I'm not racist. Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, just having the conversations and letting them know that, you know, racism as we live it today in 2024 isn't this kind of you can't go there and you go there. It's more, it's very systemic and it's in the air that we breathe, right? It's in our systems. It's in our education systems. It's in our criminal justice systems. It's in our journalism. It's everywhere, right? And so having them recognize that it's in the air we breathe and this is why it shows up in the way that it shows up, they were able to understand a little bit more, right? I think they walked into the room thinking, oh, she's going to tell me that I am this or I am that. But I tend not to operate that way because people can't hear you when you say those things. They don't hear you anymore. They stop listening.
Well, because they get defensive, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. But I'm reading the book White Women right now.
Yeah.
And I love that. Not even the first chapter, the preface that these two authors actually wrote. Before you throw the book away, just keep reading because it's not a personal attack, which is like you say, it's in the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's everywhere. It's like you talking to the person next to you. And some people, this is not an excuse, but some people don't even know that they hold that kind of belief until you tell them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have experience working with youth.
Yes.
And I haven't met many therapists that have, because I think a lot of people are like, I don't want to touch that age group. I just don't think I'm going to be good at it. But I would love to hear your thoughts on youth these days. And also you got two young sons. And social media. Mm-hmm. How do you think parents, maybe even youth, can navigate this moving forward? Because it's going to be there. It's not going away.
It's not going away. You're right. I think I recently heard that there is a lawsuit or something that's happening for some of the giants behind these social media companies. Because it's having a detrimental impact on our young people. I remember years ago, a 15-year-old was brought into my practice and her mother brought her in and said, she's really depressed. We don't know what's going on. Can you talk to her? Asked her about the third session, because they take a while. After about the third session, we began to realize that she was struggling significantly with her self-esteem because of social media. I don't look like this. I'm not popular like those people. The boys don't like me because of that. And I don't have that many followers, like all the things, right? And I don't have the likes because young people, humans in general, but specifically young people, are searching for belonging, right? Are searching for validation. And particularly in the preteen, teenage years, they need it from their parents. Their parents definitely need to provide it, but they're not going in search of it from their parents, right? They're going in search of it from their peers. And what do their peers know? Their peers don't know anything because they're 13 as well. And so they head to social media and they're looking for the likes. They're looking for the likes to provide the validation. They're looking for the likes to provide that sense of belonging. You fit in. We love you. And if they don't get the likes, it feels like rejection. And when people live or operate from a space of rejection, the self-esteem suffers. You don't know who you are anymore. We wind up with the people pleasing. So it's a real challenge. I would say with parents, don't be in such a rush to get your kid a phone. I understand the need for communication. Let's see how we can navigate the communication. Don't just get a phone for your 8-year-old. Right?
Yeah.
Becomes problematic. When something like the phone does become involved, you must set ground rules and parameters. Each family has to do what works for them. But parameters I would suggest are things like your parents need to know what the password is for this phone. Right? Mm-hmm. If you give your child permission to have social media, I mean, it's easy to say, I need to be on your account, or I need to have the password for the account, or so on. But the child can easily create, you know, a burner account or identity and try to hide that. I would try to be as transparent as possible. Think about what your values are as a family. Talk to your child about that. If you do not have good communication with your child, then social media is going to create a problem. Because if they're being bullied on social media, if they are being ostracized on social media and they don't have good communication with you, then you won't know when things get out of hand. So you must have a practice of communicating regularly with your child. If that isn't in place for you yet, slow down on the social media stuff or get into family therapy and boost that or solidify that before you give them all the social media in the world. You know, our 12-year-old, he's been asking us for a phone since he was 9 years old. We just cleaned off one of our old phones and gave him a phone. He doesn't have the capability to put apps on there. He has to ask our permission. We tether it to our phone usage. We limit his data. He's been asking for he wants to get on Snapchat. We've told him no. We're just not ready for that yet. He thinks he's ready. All of his friends are on it. And we're mindful of things like feeling on the outside because all of the friends are on it, right? We're mindful of what that can feel like. And so we have these conversations on a regular basis, and we try to provide other ways for it. They're still young enough where they can't drive. So they need us to go places, right? So we try as much as possible to create other ways for them to connect, right? Can they hang out together? You know, bring your friend. We can have your friends over. We'll do a movie night, right? You want to play video games? We can do that here. Get to know the parents of some of your children's friends so that you can trust in knowing where your child is going. If they say, can I go over to such and such house, right? Do you feel comfortable for that? Really pay attention. I think for me, the underlying factor is communication and a sense of emotional safety or psychological safety. Really create a foundation for that first before we dabble into social media. Because once you get into that, the way that it looks right now is there's no turning back. And I will say research has shown that depression and a sense of anxiety has increased over the past, I would say, maybe 14, 13, 15 years around that mark. And when we take a look at what has happened in our society, is the creation of social media, mm-hmm. right? And I can't say that it's causal, but it's certainly a significant correlation. And it's one that we have to pay attention to in our society.
Yeah. And, you know, and we linked that into not just youth, but also adults.
Yeah.
That
100%.
That looking for validation online.
Mm-hmm.
No, I personally, I don't think it's all bad, but I think.
No.
I agree with you is that you have to, especially as a parent, you have to keep an eye on it, right? Yeah. You don't just let them have free reign because there's so much danger.
Yes. And they're so young. They can't tell the difference, right? It can be a wonderful tool. I've met amazing people on social media. I met you,
yes.
Right? I've met amazing people, but we are people who have balance. We know how to navigate certain things. We have better judgment than 14-year-old young people, right? And we're mental health clinicians. There are certain skills that we have where we can use social media as a tool, right? 15-year-olds don't necessarily have that judgment yet. They're still growing up. Their prefrontal cortex is not fully developed yet. So as parents, we must be that for them.
I'm curious if you have any thoughts on it. Not just youth, but even adults who are on social media and those who feel isolated. And they are on there looking for the likes, looking for the comments. And that's what they push, right? If you don't like a post, people don't like to post. The algorithm, your posts are not going to show up. And you get someone, people who are isolated, they don't have community, they don't have friends. Now, social media is where they feel seen. My advice usually to my clients is be really careful of who you follow.
Yeah.
Right? Follow the ones that makes you feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
The social justice people.
Exactly.
Not the people who are out there selling like the Louis Vuitton bag for $100,000 and you can't afford it.
Can't afford it.
Then you start to feel bad about yourself. I'm curious, do you have thoughts about how to help or encourage people to go find community? And I'm not against online community, but are there ways that people can go, okay, I need to feel seen. I need people. But I also need to know that the likes don't matter, the comments don't matter.
And I recognize that there are some people who, you know, might be physically isolated, maybe due to physical limitations or so on, being a senior, feeling shut in. So with those instances, the internet connection is important, right? But to your point, who are we following? Are we following people who are very superficial? Are we following people? I often say, pay attention to how you feel, right? Really pay attention to how you feel. How does your body feel? Do you get a sense in the pit of your stomach? Do you feel heavy? Do you feel lighter? Do you feel energized when you're in touch with this person? Or do you feel down, like a second-rate version of yourself? These are things to pay attention to. Our bodies are miraculous and they guide us, right? So do you feel awful, in an awful feeling in the pit of your stomach? Do you feel like, oh, they're always traveling and I can never get on a plane? What's wrong with me? Pay attention to those things. Even if you have to pause or mute those accounts or unfollow them for a month or two until you start to feel more like yourself, right? Definitely use the unfollow button very liberally. There should be, a mute button as well on some social media platforms where you can reduce how many times you see posts from that person. Pay attention to how you feel. And also understand that for some people, social media is lovely. It's a great tool, but it cannot be the only way that we interact, right? When I think of maybe even the summer or fall of 2020, when we were sequestered to our homes, there is a reason that people's mental health problems went up during the pandemic, because being physically social, being physically active, being able to get up and leave your house and see a friend, break bread with someone, cook with someone, bring someone some flowers, share some tea or a glass of wine or whatever it is that you drink. But connecting with people in person has a wonderful effect on the psyche, right? And so only having online connections, while I understand, is very helpful for people who don't have any other options. If you have options, it is important from time to time to take the friendship offline, right? And go hiking or go to a pottery class or go and grab a coffee at your local coffee shop, right? Go to the library and check out some books and do a book club. But participate in real life living as your options would allow you to. But if that is not available to you, be mindful of who you follow. Be mindful of the comparison trap. because social media is a display of people's highlight reels. People will show, you know, their beautiful relationship and you see hashtag couple goals, but you're not seeing the drag out fights that are happening in the middle of the night. You're not seeing that they're actually in couple therapy, which is not a bad thing. You're not seeing that they're screaming at each other. You're not seeing that they're not very good at parenting. You're not seeing those pieces. Nobody's posting that. Mm-hmm. Nobody's posting the mess that's on the kitchen counter. Nobody's posting that, right? So be mindful that all that glitters is not gold on the internet.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, and I always tell friends and clients, if the account I follow, they're not sharing that they're having a bad day.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You don't want them to overshare. We also know that a lot of people are oversharing.
Yeah.
But you want to be honest, right? Yeah, you've been married for 25 years. It's not all loving.
It's not always. Exactly.
Oh. I'm aware of our time. Last question.
Yes.
Any advice for new therapists?
I would say new therapists in practice for themselves or just new, fresh out of school?
I think fresh out of school.
Okay.
Whatever comes to your mind. Because I think whatever comes to your mind.
Let's do both. I would say people who are fresh out of school, understand that you still have a lot of learning. Get a mentor. You're going to make mistakes. Give yourself grace. Right? You cannot fix everything. There are a lot of things that you cannot fix. But understand that, and also don't beat up on yourself because you cannot fix everything. There are a lot of issues in life that we cannot fix, but understand that you are a place where people can bring the thing. Just being able to talk about it is an unburdening that is cathartic, right? So even if you cannot fix their issue, you are giving them a space and you're helping them hold it. And that is important. But get yourself a mentor, someone who's a few steps ahead of you to help you in this work. Take care of yourself because this work, we use ourselves to do this work. We're not like gardeners who use garden tools, a lawnmower, clippers. We use our hearts and our minds to do this work. So it's important to take the time to recharge. For people who are already doing therapy in some kind of capacity and are now becoming entrepreneurs and you're getting into private practice, I will say again, get a mentor. Understand that being a good therapist does not mean you are now a good business owner, right? You might be leaving your employer. Yes, you will continue to be a therapist, but now you are running a business. And that takes a different kind of skill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So get the support that you need.
When we opened our clinic 8-9 years ago, we hired a business coach. But one of the things I realized was nobody tells you all the back end things that happen.
No.
Because all they see is the front. Oh, you got a business. You got a website. But everything that you need to do at the
Nobody tells you that.
No.
Nobody tells you that.
This is lovely. Thank you, Roxanne. I'm so
excited. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. This is a good conversation.
Such a good conversation with Roxanne. This week, advice from EE, your Chinese auntie, me, is let's go back to the topic of scanning for safety. Now, for those of us who identify as BIPOC, oftentimes we scan for safety, and for many, they don't know they're doing it. For example, when you leave the house and you're walking down the street, the moment you stepped out of your house, you look right and left and take in the whole picture before you start walking. For some of you listening, you might think, oh, that's normal. But for those who are BIPOC, those with a history of trauma or those who have faced racism, the act of looking around when you step out of your house or your apartment that is a way to take a look at the environment and to see, oh, is it safe? Can I start walking? Now, I don't believe that there's anything wrong with doing that. I actually think if that's what your nervous systems need to feel safe, go ahead and do it. But I also want to remind you is that as you do that, also look around for what feels safe. It could be a big tree. It could be a dog that you see. It may be a smile from a stranger face. And then pause and let that sink into your body. See how that feels. So remember, don't always just scan for threats. Learn to scan for safety too. For me, on a spring day when I'm out walking our puppy Bailey, I do scan and see the big picture, what's out there. Then I also, as we're walking, I make an intentional effort to look at flowers. Daffodils are blooming and then tulips are coming up because they make me feel safe and I really love flowers. I hope you have a great week. Take care of yourself.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Conversations with Your Chinese Auntie podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. That helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Also, remember to sign up for our newsletter to receive free materials and updates. Links in the website, patriciapeterson.ca. That's PatriciaPeterson.ca. Again, thanks for listening. We hope you have a great week, and we'll see you in the next episode.